morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 29th of April. And what a beauty of a weekend it was. All things political coming up this hour, and we'll have two guests with us. Ron Allen is joining us. The first part of the program, NBC News correspondent. He's based in New York, and you see him frequently, of course, on NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams. He's on the Today Show and MSNBC. He has a real interesting background. Most recently, he has been extensively covering the marathon bombing in Boston. He has done a wide range of national and international stories. He did the abuse scandal at Penn State, the Arab Spring incredible story from Cairo, Egypt, the earthquake in Haiti, and the 2012 election campaign, and also the 2008 election campaign. He was, for a number of years, a London-based correspondent for ABC News, and he has worked all over the world in lots of countries, so he'll have some things to say about Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Israel, Palestinian territories. He spent a lot of time in Africa and has a lot of reporting he has done about Nelson Mandela. So he will be with us, the first part of our All Things Political, and later Amanda Turco will join us, senior political reporter and politics managing editor at the Huffington Post. We have a lot to talk about. We want to hear the update on what is the investigation is as to whether or not the bombers in Boston had any kind of assistance and how you track down a story like that and what it's like to cover a story that is eerie and frightening and really kind of horrendous. We will be talking with Amanda Turkel later on during this hour. She is senior political reporter and politics managing editor for the Huffington Post. All hour, join us. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. One of the big stories, of course, of the last week, and I just want to alert your attention to this because this man has been working to rectify horrendous factory conditions for years and years and years. Charlie Kernaghan will be joining us on Thursday's program to look at the garment factories, particularly this horrendous event with hundreds of people who died at the garment factory in Bangladesh. So special attention to that. We'll cover that some this hour, but special attention with Charlie Kernaghan on Thursday of this week. Ron Allen, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Thanks.
Good. I enjoy your work very much. And you've been in Boston most recently. So let's start there, which I'm sure must be, as a reporter, an incredibly difficult story to cover, wasn't it?
Well, it is for many reasons. I used to live and work in Boston at one of the local stations there many years ago. I've covered a number of Boston marathons. My in-laws live in the suburbs of Boston. My wife, as a child, spent a lot of time in Watertown, of all places. Mm. So there are a lot of things about that story that hit close to home. And my family and friends are okay, which was one of the first things I tried to find out. Interestingly, the night of we got there, I ran into a cousin-in-law down at one of the hospitals, and so he was able to tell me that, in fact, everybody was fine, which was a big concern in the back of my mind. But yeah, it's just very odd. I've seen a lot of disaster and war and peace around the world, but it's always so much more poignant when it's right in your back door, Boylston Street. You know, I walked down the street 100 times, so this was different. Yes.
So tell me, what are the questions that you would like to have answered? Where does the story go from here? Is it whether or not these guys had help?
Well, I guess that's one line of investigation. Obviously, that. People want to know. I guess my biggest question is how do two young men who come to this country and are given asylum, one becomes a U.S. citizen, the younger brother, on September 11th, oddly enough, mm-hmm. How do they get to the point where they're so angry or so radicalized, as the term goes, that they would want to do something like this, allegedly? We all get angry. We all feel alienated at times, but I guess it's that psychological process and that movement that I don't understand, and I wish there are answers to, and maybe there aren't answers to it. Maybe the surviving brother won't be able to give us answers, but that's what really intrigues me. And, you know, again, traveling around the world and to countries where there's a lot of anti-American sentiment at times about different issues, I get that people don't like America for any number of reasons. But why people who like these two would get this far is just it's really quite intriguing to me.
Yeah, it is to me as well. What about the whole Russian-American cooperation and trying to track terrorism? Is there a problem there? Will we be able to strengthen that bond as a result of all that's happened here?
Well, clearly there seems to have been some lack of communication during the process where Tamerlan was identified, and I don't know the extent of it, but as you know, our relationship with Russia is not as good as it perhaps could be, and there's some work to be done there. So, but when you look at these things in hindsight, they're a lot clearer than they probably were when all this was going on, and it leads you to wonder how many other people are there who were at that same level of concern, curiosity that the Russians had with the Tsarnaev brothers and the family and the mother, apparently. How many other people are at that same level of analysis right now and dialogue between the United States and Russia or any other country? And, again, this all looks clear and obvious. Something more should have been done with the hindsight that we now have. But obviously, yes, that this person could be somewhere on the radar, but not high enough on the radar, clear enough on the radar, is troubling. And I'm sure the intelligence community is really trying to figure that out.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that it's very difficult, Ron, to track all of the people who are somewhere on the radar. There must be a lot of people on the radar, and that's a huge job to find out what their motivations are, what they might do, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many hundreds or thousands of people there probably are, but we've had one incident of this one terrorist bombing on U.S. soil, the first in many years, and so that's two people. How many plots have been foiled? How many people have been on the list and dealt with in one way or another? It's those are interesting questions. Some of which you get answers to, but some of which you don't. My reporting really wasn't that focused on that aspect of it. So much of what we were doing, or what I was doing when I was in Boston now last week, was more about the place, the scene, the victims on the ground. But yes, that's the foreign policy aspects of this are very, and the intelligence aspects of this are very, very, very curious to me.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you think about all of the people who lost limbs and people who lost lives in this, and their lives are just, it's very hard to move on, isn't it? Their lives are forever changed so substantially.
Yeah, we in so many of these situations, we focus on the number of people who are killed, even in war and reporting war. We focus on the death toll, and we don't really focus as much on the injury toll.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, that can, these are ordinary people who went out for a Monday afternoon family event. It's striking how many kids were involved. There was a young child who was killed, we know, of Martin Richard. But for a long time, there was a 7-year-old girl on the critical list at Boston Children's Hospital, and we don't know much about her because of confidentiality. But what is her life going to be like? And the others. It's I was really intrigued in listening to some of the doctors talk about the decision to amputate a limb and how difficult it is for them, and how they go through a lot of options and they discuss this thoroughly, because it is a huge decision. In many cases, it probably saves a life, but yes, the quality of life for someone afterwards is just it's mind-blowingly different. And for a child, or a young person especially, how sad is that? But there are also stories of remarkable resilience, and some of the patients who did endure amputations were quoted as saying, and one in fact said, how fortunate he felt just to be alive, and he was trying to you know, to keep that in mind. But I imagine they're going to be very, very difficult days ahead.
Yes. Well, your reporting was so good. It was really good. Let's go to another part of the world where there was another horrendous event, and that's in Bangladesh. I know you weren't there covering it, but there's something about this story that's really unnerving. The conditions in which these people work, the fact that they are making clothing that goes to Western countries so that we can all look kind of chic, and they're working in these horrendous conditions that caused huge loss of life. What are we to make of that story?
Well, you know, these things happen every once in a while, and it puts the broader issue on our agenda. The working conditions in so many third world countries are horrific, and they're conditions that would never be tolerated in the United States. I've covered a number of earthquakes in places like India,
yes,
and Turkey, and you know, distant villages, and you know, there you always see how poor the workmanship is, how the concrete has been watered down to spread it, and so the buildings just crumble. And in other parts of the world, yes, you see not just workers, but you see child laborers. I remember being in Pakistan many years ago and doing a story about these kids who built bricks out of clay, this was what their job was every day, making bricks and then hauling them to some place where they would become buildings. But these are kids who are, you know, who are 9, 10 years old, and they're employable and they're manipulable. But you see that in so many places around the world. And yes, you know, every once in a while, when a factory fire or something comes up, it puts it on the radar that yes, a lot of I don't know the extent of it, but a lot of things that Americans benefit from are made in places where we wouldn't tolerate the working conditions. And you know, some companies do things about it, and they're in the spotlight about it. I remember Nike was in the spotlight some time ago, but yeah, it's a concern. And I don't know that situation in Bangladesh very well, but it is certainly emblematic and symptomatic of a much larger problem.
Mm-hmm. The president is going to receive more pressure, although he seems to be wanting more complete information about the chemical weapons that may be used in Syria. What kind of pressure do you think he is experiencing? And how do you get evidence? How can you get evidence about whether or not chemical weapons are widely used and whether or not they might be used by both sides in that conflict?
Well, I guess the best intelligence is always on the ground, from witnesses, from informers, from people who see things, from aid workers and others who are there and see people arrive in refugee camps or treat them in hospitals, and you see the injuries and you hear the accounts. Syria is a tough place to get into, and it's a tough place to operate in. But I'm sure the United States has a lot of resources to try and get at this. The whole Syria thing, you know, it's very, very challenging. You know, you remember, for some perspective, when Libya was at the similar point that Syria was at 2 years ago, you know, the United States acted quickly. We were much more engaged in Egypt and in that revolution and in not supporting Mubarak because of Egypt's huge role in the region as an American ally, particularly with regards to Israel and the peace treaty and so forth. Syria is a much different, more complicated case, and for that reason, the United States has had to deal with it at arm's length. So, but the president said, you know, a red line is a game changer is chemical weapons, and as I think I heard somebody say on the talk show, it can't be a dotted line; it has to be a solid line. So yes, there will be a lot of curiosity, a lot of pressure on the administration to do some. There's already been that, but again, you know, Syria hasn't. It's amazing. I think 70,000 people have been killed over the past couple of years. And you know, I remember when all this started going, I was in Jordan going to the Syrian border. We couldn't get in back then, but there were people coming across the border, taxi drivers who work on both sides. And we were getting, you know, firsthand accounts of this, you know, so long ago. And to think that it has gone on and spiraled for the last 2 years, it's unimaginable. And but certainly understandable, because again, you know, the United States is in terms of its foreign policy, while we are doing things in Syria, these are not you know, these are not crises that rise to the level of, you know, of immediate concern. You know the Obama administration, you know, is engaged in some places and certainly has been engaged to some extent in Syria, but perhaps chemical weapons, perhaps if we see evidence of horrific injuries, horrific wounds as a result of this, it will cause the world to act. That's always the pattern. You know, in so many crises, once the situation gets really horrific, once there are pictures on TV, be it starving kids in Africa or in the Balkans many years ago, men who looked like prisoners of war in a concentration camp. Once those images start to appear, it becomes almost it just becomes impossible for the United States not to step up in greater ways, and so perhaps we will see that.
Ron Allen is our guest for the first part of All Things Political, NBC News correspondent. We're welcoming phone calls for him. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@WPR.org. And you can always leave messages for us because we love to read Facebook on the Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now for Ron Allen, and let's start with Carl in Madison. Hi, Carl.
Hello. I guess the way to get on is to take a bite of cereal. I'm sorry. I am not at all a conspiracy theorist by nature or anything like that, and with all respect to the grieving families and the horrific situation in Boston, but even touching on these other events that you're describing and reporting on, it seems that when I talk with folks from other countries about some of the reporting that we do about events going on in there that the United States foreign policy is involved in, or in the case of the bombing where you've got the aunt going on record saying that guy that they put in the car, the naked guy that they found is my nephew, and I swear by it, and the parents who are saying he was framed, and all these other kinds of things that come up, and then the person reading the news story or, you know, searching on the internet has to kind of come to their own conclusions. As a reporter, and to the degree as an investigative reporter, how do you sort out some of the aspects of the way a story is officially told, and then lingering doubts or questions or alternate versions that have to get parsed by you to try and tell to some degree what you can understand is the truth, and yet you're dealing with conflicting narratives at times where things just aren't going to add up. You've got to tell it from one perspective or another.
Well, I think the first thing you do is you rely on reliable sources, experts in the area that the story falls into. In this case, NBC News has a number of consultants and a lot of great sources, particularly my colleague Pete Williams down in D.C., who's been doing an incredible job of sorting through fact and fiction. I think a lot of it also comes down to experience and instinct and you know, something quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck, and if it doesn't, it's not. And there are judgments you make along the way about what seems real and what doesn't seem real. And you're right, in this day and age, particularly a lot of the stuff you see on social media and from citizen reporters, quote-unquote, a lot of it turns out to be maybe partially true. You know, maybe sometimes there's a lead, sometimes it is very true. But I think that's basically what you do. You know, you rely on experts, consultants, instinct, and good old common sense.
Thanks, Carl, for your call. Jeff in Mosinee. Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
Hi.
Real quick thought. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but if I remember, it used to be that a president could wage war for 90 days, and then the Congress either had to approve it to continue or take away the money, and the president had to pull the troops back. So as a result of 9/11, the Congress, you know, gave the president power to wage war as long as he wanted because they didn't want the responsibility. And now you've got people like John McCain and some of these other weirdos standing up and saying, yeah, let's attack Syria. Let's go figure out, you know, where we can wage another war that we don't need and we can't solve, can't win. I'm just thinking, you know, if they want to be able to say that kind of stuff, they need to vote to get the responsibility back, and then they need to take the responsibility. They can't just say that stuff and voice the responsibility on the president. That's my thought.
Okay, thanks. You want to respond, Ron?
I guess I'm not quite sure how to respond.
All right.
I believe there are many, as we've seen in Iraq and other places, Libya, there are various ways that the president can and cannot use the military. And but I think Congress still plays a pretty significant role in all that, and for obvious reasons.
Jim in Pleasant Prairie, hi.
Yes, good morning, and I'd like to compliment the first caller on a good call. Mine is somewhat related. Tragedies like Boston Marathon bombing, as well as the horrific incident in Newtown, Connecticut, have a tremendous copycat factor involved in them. These type of people, they want to disrupt, and they want attention, and our media is just give them an incredible amount of emotional gratification, and certainly ensure that something similar to those is going to happen in a very short period of time.
Jim, what are you saying, that it shouldn't be covered as much, or what's your problem with it?
Well, I mean, you know, there again, related to the second call, immediately they're so desperate to get a story out quickly, they don't even bother to verify the story that they're putting together.
Okay, well, that begs a couple questions. The amount of coverage on this and getting sources and getting it right. Ron?
Well, you know, I Newtown, the bombing, yes, they get enormous coverage, and rightfully so. I think if you talk to most people, they want to know
right.
things, and it's, you know, tragic, and it's emotional, and, you know, it's real. I mean, I think a lot of people that I talk to out in the real world want authenticity. You know, they don't believe reporters when we stand there and we're completely detached and emotionless. And yes, there are lines to be crossed, and yes, there's a way to do this, but I think, you know, you have to tell the world what's really going on, and these things are horrific and emotional, and that's a huge part of it. And, you know, I go back to what I said a minute ago about getting it right. There are a number of instances, particularly in this Boston Marathon thing, where there were some gross errors made, and various outlets were called on them. But I think the bottom line is, yes, we have to be very careful in the race to be first, in the race to get it new. I mean, you know, the cable news industry, in particular, social media, you're under every hour, you're on the air, every half hour. And yes, there's a lot of pressure to say something new, say something different, to report, you know, what may not be 100% verified, but only 80% verified or 50% verified. And when I'm in those situations, I preface and I try to explain, look, you know, we're hearing a report that X is Y, but we're not quite sure yet. And so, you know, listen carefully, because maybe it will become Y, but now it's not. And so that's what I try to do, to just, you know, be real and honest and authentic about what I know and what I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know if you went to the White House Correspondents' Dinner, but I was interested. I thought one of the funniest lines, although it was funny and it was not funny, of the president's was, "I'm not the strapping young Muslim socialist I used to be." And as I heard him say that, I thought, boy, did we waste a lot of time on that whole issue. And I was wondering from you, because you covered him, the election in 2008 and 2012, are we beyond all of that now?
The whole birther thing, I guess.
Right.
You know, there's an election in a couple of years. I actually want to sooner. Whether that all goes away, you know, I don't know. It's an amazing thing that it got so much attention.
It
and
is.
The president actually one day had to stand up and show his birth certificate. I mean, how crazy is all of that? But there, you know, there are people who do believe these things, and there are, you know, it's not a joke to them. They take it seriously. And, you know, no, I was not at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. I'm not on that list. I've gone in years past. but, you know, the whole occasion is just, it's amazing how it's become such a part of the pop culture. It's become part of the news environment. It, you know, it used to be just a Washington thing, you know, that only reporters and politicians and their guests really attended. And maybe there was a clip or two here or there from something funny that the comedian or the president at the moment said, but it's really become quite a phenomenon. And I know there was a lot of criticism, or some criticism, last time around from Tom Brokaw and others who thought that maybe we shouldn't be doing it this way in these times. And, you know, I have to say, watching it or watching clips of it the other day, it's funny, it's all that. It's good to see our politicians, our president, who can let his hair down a little bit and all that. But I wonder what the average Mary or Joe in Middle America thinks when they look at this room full of people in black tie and
right.
and glitz and all that. And I can imagine some people would be uncomfortable watching it.
What are you covering this week, sir?
Well, I'm in Chicago. I went to Atlanta, actually, of all places, earlier in the week. I'm doing a story about an interesting dispute that involves the Atlanta Falcons and the city of Atlanta trying to build a new dome stadium very close to the one that exists in Atlanta now. And the issue is that to build the stadium where they want to build it, two historic African-American churches, one that's 151 years old, would have to move and relocate.
Oh.
And so it's a very emotional issue for this church. It's one of perhaps the oldest predominantly black church in Atlanta, Friendship Baptist. There are some people who are adamant against it, that this is sacred, holy land, a landmark place. It's a place where colleges like Spelman and Morehouse were rooted. It's a place that, in fact, during the Civil War, it was a boxcar, and that's how the church started. And now they're trying to decide their future, whether to accept essentially a multi-million dollar payoff from the city and others, or whether to stand their ground. And so that's the latest thing I'm looking at, and we hope to have that story on this week on the NBC Nightly News.
Great. Ron, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate your thoughts and time.
Thank you.
Ron Allen, NBC News correspondent, our first guest for All Things Political. Amanda Turkle is joining us now, senior political reporter and politics managing editor for The Huffington Post. We'll continue phone calls, so stay where you are, because whatever you wanted to say to Ron, unless you wanted to comment on a specific piece, will be applicable for conversation with Amanda. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Amanda, hello. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Let me start with this story, which you've been running yesterday and today on the Huffington Post, which really is amazing. From Kabul, Afghanistan, for more than a decade, wads of American dollars packed into suitcases, backpacks, and on occasion, plastic shopping bags have been dropped off every month or so at the offices of Afghanistan's president, courtesy of the Central Intelligence Agency. That's quite a story.
I mean, it's really disturbing, and I think it just raises a lot of doubts in Americans' minds that, you know, we invaded Afghanistan. That was something that a lot of people supported, the vast majority of the American public supported after the September 11th terrorist attacks. But, you know, being there so long, that sort of rebuilding effort really went awry. More terrorist groups popped up. And now we're seeing even more so there's all this corruption.
Yeah, it goes on and on and on, and you wonder what are you getting out of it?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, there was an interesting, I heard an interesting piece recently by a soldier, I think it was in the Washington Post, by a soldier who served in Afghanistan. He went there after 9/11, but after the Boston Marathon bombing, he questioned whether his service in Afghanistan was really worth it, because he said, you know, I thought that we would be helping make the world a better place, helping, you know, make America's image better. But after the Boston Marathon bombing, I just really questioned, was this all worth it? Was my service worth it?
What has Hamid Karzai done with those tens of millions of dollars? Does anybody know?
I don't know what he's done with it. I think that's a great question. I mean, the U.S. has had a pretty fraught relationship with Hamid Karzai. You know, we need to keep him close. He needs to remain a strong U.S. ally. But a lot of American politicians have really sort of wondered, you know, how reliable of an ally is he? There have been questions about corruption, about his government, and I think that this further fuels that.
Yeah. Well, it's quite a story. I'll look forward to reading more about it. You wrote recently about sequestration. They, for whatever reason, maybe everybody needed to get home, got the flight delays taken care of. Who's suffering from sequestration right now, and how do we see our way out of it, Amanda?
Right now, the people who are suffering are the people who are sort of the least politically empowered. They're the people who you're not going to see on the Hill lobbying. They're Head Start families, seniors who receive Meals on Wheels. And so they're not going out lobbying because they're sitting at home and they're waiting for Meals on Wheels because many of them aren't mobile. They don't have forms of transportation. A lot of colleges, research institutes are losing funding. I know that food banks are closing. I heard an alcohol sort of rehabilitation center is closing. So these are people who aren't as powerful as business travelers who fly on airlines and lawmakers who don't want flight delays when they're going home to their districts. So these are the people who now really don't see a way out of sequestration. And Congress seems to be now taking more of a piecemeal approach instead of coming up with one big solution to fix sequestration, which is what President Obama wants Congress to do.
Do you see any movement toward ending this, or are we just going to live with this?
Well, I think that, again, President Obama in his weekend address said that he wants Congress to end it.
Right.
And a lot of Democrats voted for the FAA, the airport fix, so that FAA employees aren't going to be furloughed. And they say they want to fix it, too. But a lot of Republicans are happy fixing it sort of piecemeal, allowing agencies to have more flexibility in how they administer the sequestration cuts, but keeping the overall sequestration cuts in place. So right now there is a lot of disagreement about how to go ahead, and I don't see the two sides coming together anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. Let's move to a story that you had, which is really pretty interesting. America's black voters turned out at a higher rate than other minority groups in 2012, and by most measures surpassed white turnout for the first time. Isn't that something?
Well, it helps explain why Mitt Romney did so poorly.
Yes.
I mean, we all knew that he did not perform well with minority groups. But this really highlights how little enthusiasm there was for Mitt Romney, even amongst white voters, and how much enthusiasm there was, though, for President Obama. I mean, on inauguration, we talked to a lot of African-American voters who said they were excited the first time around, but getting President Obama back into office for a second term just meant so much more to them. So that's why they felt like they had to come down to D.C. and be at his inauguration. But there was just very, very little enthusiasm for Mitt Romney amongst, now it appears, all voters.
Mm-hmm. Let's welcome phone calls for you. It's All Things Political. Amanda Turkle is our guest this part of the program, senior political reporter, politics managing editor for The Huffington Post. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk@WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. You can get a hold of us any of those ways. Jim in Milwaukee, hi.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to give a confrontation to conservative thinkers, and especially the man that last week that suggested, because I inferred that the way we treat people in the third world might have had something to do with the way these young men acted out in Boston, even though their behavior was not supportable. Basically, the person opposed a love it or leave it type thought. And I think that conservatives need to man up and face up to the civic and religious responsibilities and think and read more before they speak out. And it occurred to me that probably the man that called and I are both Christians. And as Christians, we believe that only God is perfect. And so common sense tells us that since God is perfect and we aren't, inherently there are going to be situations when America is going to be at fault. And when we face these situations, we must be honest and humble and open-minded. But that's not what you hear from the conservative leadership, which influences these people. Romney said he would never criticize America. And Daddy Bush, way back in 1988, said he would never criticize America, even in light of the facts. And so they in that situation, they can never admit they're wrong. And it's like walking down the street with a sign on your back that says, liar and closed-minded. And it seems to me that they've got to stop conning themselves and start being honest and stop lying to themselves and others.
Amanda, you want to respond?
Well, I mean, I think that a little bit about, I think there were a lot of unease with things that Mitt Romney was saying during the election, not just from, obviously, Democrats who didn't vote for him, but also from conservatives. And this is now leading to a sort of reevaluation on the right amongst Republicans and conservatives about which way to go. Mitt Romney really wasn't a standard bearer, and what he put forward during the election isn't really what conservatives are looking at now. They're looking more toward people like Marco Rubio, Ford, Paul Ryan, and people like that. So, Mitt Romney, I think, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on your perspective, isn't going to have a huge lasting impact on the conservative party, conservative movement.
Thanks very much for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Let's spend a few moments on Syria. There seems to be some confusion about whether or not there are chemical weapons. There seems to be some confusion about whether or not both sides may have them, if either side does have them, and yet it could be a call for us to become involved in Syria. What do you think about what the president is thinking about all of this and what kind of evidence we have and what kind of action we might take, Amanda?
Well, caution on Syria is wise. I mean, we went into the war in Iraq thinking that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, and that turned out to be completely untrue. So I think that the administration wants to make sure that Syria is actually using chemical weapons, which President Obama has said is a line that would further U.S. involvement. So some caution is wise. Republicans like John McCain, Lindsey Graham, have been pushing for more U.S. involvement in Syria for quite some time, although John McCain has said that he doesn't want boots on the ground at this point, but would like to see the U.S. arm opposition forces in Syria more. And I think that is something that the administration now is looking at.
Mm-hmm. It certainly is something where the Republicans are calling for something to be done right now. There seems to be a real political divide on this issue at the moment.
There is, although Republicans were calling for more U.S. involvement. Again, people like Lindsey Graham and John McCain, even before they knew that Bashar al-Assad was using chemical weapons. So they've been calling for this some time. Now they are just using this to strengthen their case. But we don't really know yet sort of what the dynamics are within the administration. I assume that there probably are people who are pushing for more involvement and others who would like to take a more cautious approach, too.
To phone calls, 800-486-8655. Ray in Milwaukee, hello.
Yes. What's going on in Syria is actually could be part of the reason why these young Muslims became radicalized. They saw that we went into Iraq immediately. There's oil in Iraq. They saw we went into Afghanistan because presumably Osama bin Laden was there. But as people, women and children, are being bombed in their homes, and every day Muslim men, women, and children are seeing this on their newscasts, Al Jazeera, they're seeing it. And they're also seeing it on the internet if they happen to live here. This is what's radicalizing these young kids. If we don't care about other people's children being killed by drone bombs like Afghanistan, Yemen, Pakistan, if we can't feel for their pain, if we can't feel that, then they're going to bring it here to our shores and give us a little taste of what we've been doing to them.
Amanda.
Well, we also have to be careful because U.S. involvement in places like Iraq and Afghanistan has also helped inflame tensions and been used as a recruiting tool for extremists who want, some excuse to further attack America. I mean, getting involved in Iraq, getting involved in Afghanistan, using drones, those are things that also have made a lot of people upset at America, and again, has been used, whether rightly or wrongly, as a recruiting tool. I mean, wrongly as a recruiting tool, but it hasn't. I mean, we saw during the Bush years that the image of America in Muslim countries went down quite a bit. So before we get involved, I think this is, again, something the Obama administration is looking at. We have to be careful that it's for the right reasons and done in the right way.
Let's go next to Laurel in Duluth. Hi, Laurel.
Good morning. Just a comment. My son and his family live in Shanghai, China. They will be moving back to the Milwaukee area soon. And he said the thing that he will miss most about Shanghai is that they have 10 English-speaking television channels there. And he says the news they get there is not like the news we get from Fox and CNN and so on and so forth here. Just a comment.
Well, what's it like?
It's completely different. It's not a, a rapid-fire, we'll get this story first. You get much more detail, and you'll get different aspects of, you know, what the way it's looked at.
Amanda, I've never seen news in Shanghai, so
I have not been to Shanghai, so I can't comment on that either. But you know, I think U.S. news media is unique in many ways, both sort of good and bad. You certainly get the rapid fire breaking news, social media, all of that sort of stuff. But you do also have in-depth discussions, such as on Wisconsin Public Radio. So that's part of the reason I like working in the media, and I think U.S. media is so great that no matter sort of what you want, there's somewhere to get it. And it's very, very easy to break into, to sort of start your own blog if you're a physics professor and you have expertise in something. You can start a blog and people, sort of like-minded people, can go and find it. So I think U.S. media is great. I think China has actually sort of a lot of problems with its media, sort of state-sponsored media and things like that. So I'll take U.S. media anytime.
Yeah. We were talking a little bit earlier about, Ron Allen was our guest, and he, of course, has spent a lot of time in Boston. There is something, and please explain this to me, that we were in a time last week where he had, in the last couple of weeks, all these horrible stories, the story out of Texas, the fertilizer explosion, what was going on in Boston, and we become so riveted on a certain story, and it's understandable because it's so huge, and you wonder, how could this happen, and there are many threads to a story, but we stay on it for day after day, and sometimes it's hard to move to some of the other stories that are important to cover, isn't it?
Because yes, absolutely. And I think that, you know, last week a lot of people did really outstanding coverage of the Boston bombings. But there was a point when there really was no news happening. People were just sort of waiting to figure out what was going on. Were they going to catch the suspects? And it was sort of being filled with nothing on TV networks. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, frustrated people a bit because it's like there were other things to cover. And there's a lot of other news going on that wasn't being covered. One of my favorite stories, actually, there was a Chris Christie press conference, and everyone rushed to New Jersey to cover it, and very little news was made. But there was an enterprising reporter who decided not to go to the press conference and went in the surrounding neighborhoods and looked at what happened while reporters were standing there waiting for Chris Christie. And it was really a fantastic piece, and I think sort of illustrated what you're talking about.
Oh, that's fascinating. Yeah. Sometimes it's an enterprising reporter, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Thanks, Laurel, for your call. We have lines open if you'd like to join our conversation. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Mike in Madison, hi.
Hi. Speaking of other things that need to be covered, why does the national and news media continue to identify global warming as an issue that there are two sides on, when in reality it is proven to be a problem that is really going to crush this whole century later on? And we should be covering it day to day like they did for Boston. I mean, it's that important. We've had the president identifying it that way. Why doesn't the news media come out and take a side on this? There is a side. There really is only one right side.
Well, at the risk of being too self-serving, Bill McKibben is joining us next hour of our program. But it is a huge story, isn't it? And why haven't we really been on this? Because the possibilities of what could happen from global warming are fairly catastrophic, Amanda.
I agree with you, and I agree with the caller that it's something that needs a lot more attention, and it's frustrating that outlets don't cover it more. We do try to cover it as much as we can at the Huffington Post, but it's not what you see splashed on the front page every day or anything like that. And what your caller was saying about the sort of presenting two sides, I do think that more and more, even amongst Republicans, there is the consensus that man-made global warming is happening. People are sort of still undecided on what to do about it. But I do think more and more that is becoming the consensus, and the sort of global warming deniers that are often quoted. I don't see them quoted quite as much. But again, the scientific community has come to the consensus that man-made global warming is happening. And why it's not getting as much coverage is sort of trickier, I think, partially because it's not on the agenda of politicians. President Obama did talk about it in his State of the Union address, but really we haven't seen much beyond that. There's still some chatter about the Keystone XL pipeline, mm-hmm. but it's not what politicians are focusing on now. And I think a lot of times that drives what journalists decide to cover.
Mm-hmm. Well, as McKibben says in his article, which is a good one in the Rolling Stone, again, it's the case perhaps of enterprising reporters, or I don't know how you get stories on the air, but the number of resistance groups all over the country on many fronts is really quite substantial. And you don't hear very much about that. We heard in February about the massive protest in Washington, D.C., but there are a number of important and actually fairly interesting stories that are taking place all over the country on this issue.
There are. I mean, at the grassroots level, there's quite a bit going on. Activists are doing a lot on this. Bill McKibben is obviously one of the experts on this and who has been pushing this issue forward a lot. So there is more to cover. And again, it just often takes, even if politicians aren't talking about it, it's sometimes the job of the media to continue to talk about, to continue to elevate it and keep it in the public and sort of politicians' minds.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike, for the call. Sandy in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. We'd moved back from Shanghai in 2011, and we had been there for the 2008 election, you know, for Obama, and we are here in Milwaukee for the 2012 election. And I'll tell you, the big state-sponsored media, we got none of the media coverage in 2008 or the big Sichuan earthquake. It was whatever the state-sponsored media wanted to tell us. And if you're looking at just like American politics, we missed so much, and we were overwhelmed when we came back to Milwaukee for the election here.
Hmm.
I don't know how to, I mean, it's, so whatever the previous caller was talking about it being so much more in depth, it was not. I mean, we had to do internet research and to go, I mean, on other sources, information in order to get what we really wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a very different experience. And when we, you know, coming back to the Milwaukee area and to be in the middle of politics and the media, it was really overwhelming. We had to turn the TV off, you just find yourself sucked into it so much.
Hmm. Thank you very much, Sandy, for your call. It is remarkable when you travel the world to see how stories are covered and the role of media in various places, or lack of media in various places. I think it's quite striking.
I mean, we hear also, when you're saying the lack of media, we see now that there's a story that Iraq is shutting down outlets like Al Jazeera, which is very troubling. Again,
yes.
Making people question sort of what did we get out of invading the country. But yes, in China, I mean, China and many other countries around the world have very strong, very big problems with censorship. And I think when Americans go and travel around the world, they can find that a little bit frustrating. Because they're not getting the news they're used to, or they may go and try to search something and it says you can't search that.
Yeah. Thanks, Sandy, for your call. Jody in Downing. Hi, Jody.
Hi. I just wanted to voice my agreement about the media in this country, you know, specifically places like Fox News, where I really feel like there's sensationalization and lack of fact in their reporting is frightening. And you see them working up people to, you know, be more hateful and judgmental, and, you know, just even after the Boston Marathon, how they covered that, and the talking about the Muslims, and, you know, it's just, I just think that they should be held accountable. And so I really think I agree with the other callers that are have called in. This isn't what news used to be 20 years ago. And I think that that really needs to be addressed, and they shouldn't be able to get away with saying things that aren't factual. And I think a really good example of that is the, you know, the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. You know, any of us that really looked into it knew that was a lie. And now everybody knows it was a lie, and the main media did not cover that.
Amanda.
Well, it wasn't just Fox News. It was, I mean, the New York Times had Judy Miller,
right,
who was pushing the weapons of mass destruction line. And this is what I think was so great about U.S. media, is that all these alternative forms, blogs and new media, did pop up and for people who were frustrated that the media wasn't doing the job it should be. And so, you know, what I like is, I mean, are there issues with the media? Absolutely. But we have such a robust, open debate here that things like when Fox News says something that's wrong, there are people who immediately call it out. There are people looking into the claims of media organizations. And anyone can do this and hopefully get attention to about it through Facebook or Twitter or other means. So that's what I like, is that, you know, are there problems? Yes, but they are all called out and people devise ways to try to come up with better forms of communication.
Amanda, thank you so much for being with us for our All Things Political.
Great, thank you.
Amanda Turkle, Senior Political Reporter, Politics Managing Editor for The Huffington Post. And we also thank Ron Allen, NBC News Correspondent, for joining us for this April 29 edition. For those of you who are on hold wanting to talk about global warming, if you can stay through the news, please do so. Bill McKibben will be joining us to talk about that very subject after the news. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this program. Thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. News is coming up, and we'll be back for another hour on the Ideas Network.